Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Sarah.
And this is Mark.
Today's podcast, Why Scheduling is the Most Important Component of One-on-Ones, Part 2 of 2.
The questions this cast answers are, do I really need to schedule my one-on-ones? Does scheduling one-on-ones improve their effectiveness? Do bi-weekly or monthly one-on-ones work?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Before we get started, did you know we will soon be in Silicon Valley, Cupertino to be exact, March 25th and 26th with our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences? Register online to join us at manager-tools.com/register. Now to the show.
Now, let's get to what directs say about scheduling. And this is a lot of anecdotal stuff through interviews we conducted.
A manager might still believe that scheduling isn't that important, right? Now, even though the data clearly prove it, but the results and retention data isn't all we learned. That is, from interviewing thousands of directs about the effects of their one-on-ones with their manager in our studies, we interviewed those whose managers had scheduled one-on-ones and whose managers hadn't scheduled one-on-ones, to be able to make some differentiation again, even on a deeper level between right. those two groups of had them, but scheduled and not.
Right. And of course, the ultimate driver is results from retention. We say this before, we have a podcast called Welcome to They. When you become a manager, when we talk to executives, we often say to an executive who says to us, well, my team says this, and one of the senior people around them will say, no, you've got it wrong. That's not your team. We're your team. You're on the leadership team of this organization. We call that team one, right? And when you get promoted to management, all those stories about, well, they said this, or they're going to do that, or those people up there are going to do that. When you get promoted to manager, you're part of they,
mm-hmm.
right? So anyway, what we learned really surprised us. We didn't know what we were looking for, so I guess we shouldn't have been surprised, but we wanted to be led by the data. What these people told us was that there were two primary factors that they said made an enormous difference in both their relationship with the manager and also, because it was new to the vast majority of them, their belief in the effectiveness of one-on-ones.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And folks, the first thing that Direct said about scheduled one-on-ones is that those one-on-ones elevated their perception of the manager's concern for them. They made the point that while their manager could pretty much get time with them whenever he or she wanted to, because they're the manager, and if
right.
the manager drops by their direct's desk and says, hey, can I have a second? Every smart direct says, yeah, sure, boss, what's up? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So it was a pretty one-sided street, though. It didn't really work both ways in that the directs had a much harder time getting time with their manager.
Yeah. And look, everybody understands this, right? It's one of the reasons why we recommend the Manager Tools Middleman Test. The Middleman Test teaches us that your feelings about your manager are probably very similar to the feelings your directs have about you.
Mm-hmm.
But most managers, when they're thinking about themselves, generally don't think of things that way. They think that while their manager is distant, hard to get time with, oh, he's very busy. And there are some people who don't even share their schedules because, oh, at my level, things are confidential, or I can't let you see what I'm doing or whatever else. Surely their directs don't think that about them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you ask their directs, that's exactly what their directs think of them. And this basically highlights how we might believe in general rules. We believe in them, generally speaking, but we find reasons why, as professionals, and look, self-preservation and insecurity are a couple of the big reasons for this, that the general rule doesn't apply to us. We're different. I often say to groups, I say, I know your directs don't think of you as a nice person. And of course, one person goes, well, I'm actually a pretty nice person. And I say, well, actually, yeah, you are. You seem lovely. I mean, you seem great. I didn't say you're not a nice person. I say your directs don't think of you as a nice person. They think of you as their boss. I use the example of, I live on a street and it's 4th of July weekend coming up. My boss is, his family's going to be out of town. He's staying at home. And my neighbor throws a block party on the 4th of July. And I say to my boss, hey, your family's out of town. They're visiting in-laws or whatever. Why don't you come by my house and we'll go next door to this great big block party. It's hot dogs with only mustard, by the way, and beer and sodas and a pool and kids running around and wiffle ball and skateboarding in the street and stuff like that. The boss says, okay. So he comes over to my house and we go into the backyard and we walk right across into my neighbor's yard. And I introduce him to my neighbor. Let's say my neighbor is Sean. Mm-hmm. And I say, hey, Sean, remember I said I was going to bring a guest. I want you to meet Sarah. And the next two words out of my mouth have to be my boss. Everyone knows this. Everyone. So the point of that is that the reason why you, how you're felt with about your boss, how your people feel about you is like how you feel about your boss. The reason why I tell them your directs don't think of you as a nice person is not because you're not nice, but because they think of you as their boss. And that colors everything. You said earlier, I think you said, Sarah, you go down to somebody's desk, say, hey, got a minute? And the direct, smart direct always says yes. And I tell the group, it's not because they're sitting there all the time. Yeah. Saying, I hope he comes by. I hope he comes by. I can't wait.
I can't wait. I know. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So folks, what we learned of essentially interviewing these directs is that the manager's calendar was a significant obstacle to the direct's ability to communicate with their manager. And we all know that communication is at the heart of trust building. So a manager with a full schedule and who isn't, right, has a much lower amount of communication and therefore trust building with their directs.
But directs told us when their manager scheduled their one-on-one with them, with the directs felt elevated to the same level as the other things that were on the manager's calendar before who made him or her so busy that used to keep them from communicating with those directs. So what used to be my enemy to my relationship with my boss, which is his or her calendar, I'm now at that calendar. I'm elevated to that level, and I'm going to get time every week.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And then that takes us to the second factor, right? The second thing that directs told us caused this differentiation between scheduling and not scheduling. And it was that scheduling one-on-ones made them much more likely to occur and inherently sent a message that one-on-ones were important to the manager. And again, the data bore that out. Right. Managers who schedule their one-on-ones were three times more likely to have them as managers who don't schedule their one-on-ones, which, I mean, go figure, right? I think to myself, yeah, really? We needed data to prove that, but yeah.
And now that we've shared all this data with you, you can go, how did you not think of that?
Yeah.
And I go back to our earlier comments. We didn't know, and we were trying to be not biased. And frankly, we were really just worried about weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly. So
yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Yeah. And so obviously, then, when we took the grouping, removed managers who didn't schedule their one-on-ones from the data on results and retention, the improvements then in results and retention for the group that was scheduling were even higher.
And some people have questioned me about that. Well, why then don't you report the higher numbers, the bigger gaps? I said, because that's an interpretation of the data.
Yeah.
The original data set didn't test whether or not they were scheduled. And we can't go back and look at that and say, oh, we found out these are scheduled. It's even better. Now, we found out later when we started testing scheduling one-on-ones and we checked whether or not they were scheduled. And as we mentioned earlier, briefed, it made a lot of difference. Okay. Next point. And this is one where managers push back. I just can't do it. My schedule is too fluid. Scheduling does not mean rigidity.
Mm-hmm. Folks, many managers resist scheduling because they believe that one-on-ones are somehow different than other meetings. They mistakenly believe that a one-on-one requires 100% compliance. never, ever missing the meeting. And also that they must occur at their scheduled time. And to some degree, we understand it. That is, going back to what Mark said earlier, the purpose of one-on-ones, again, this way, is to increase trust, right? To build relationship. And so managers who've then committed to one-on-ones in an effort to build trust don't then want their directs to think that they're moving their one-on-ones around and that make it seem to the direct, in this case, as though one-on-ones aren't really that important. Like, I want to have trust, but like, not so much I'm willing to adhere to schedules for you.
Right. But as it turns out, neither of these fears, right, that managers had is borne out in our experience with the data. First, regarding compliance, and when we say compliance, we mean how many of your one-on-ones do you have? It's a terrible word, but that's the scientific word for it, right? Our data shows that improvements in results from retention basically level off at about 85% compliance. It continues to go up, but the curve starts to flatten, okay? So in other words, the manager who completes 85% of her O3s, manager tools O3s, MT O3s, gets the vast majority of results from retention improvements than the manager who's able to complete 100% of their one-on-ones. Results from retention improvements rise rapidly past 50%, but then it just starts to level off asymptotically for you math geeks at around 85%. This means, just like all the other meetings we all have on our calendars, you can miss about 10% of them without having a material effect on your communication, your trust building, and your results and your retention outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And folks, we don't just have the data to support it. Again, we asked the directs. And when we asked the directs, they agreed. They understand that things happen. They themselves don't get to 100% of their meetings on time or have 100% compliance in meeting attendance each and every single week. And interestingly, there was anecdotal information that directs were much more likely to forgive managers who do one-on-ones for missing the occasional meeting than those managers who don't do one-on-ones.
Yeah. Now, regarding the rigidity of always having your one-on-ones at their scheduled time, managers are like, well, if I'm going to commit to this, I have to have it at that time. I have to really show that this is top priority, A1, super important priority.
Yeah.
But this turned out through the data and our interviews to be a non-issue as well. Directs understand, as Sarah alluded to, that in a high operational tempo, op tempo of modern organizations, all meetings get moved around on a regular basis. Meetings get stepped on by senior people. Short notice travel happens. Travel disruptions occur. I mean, Sarah, how many times have we had scheduled one-on-ones, you with your directs, me with my directs, when I was the managing partner before you and Kate took over from Mike and I, where we have a one-on-one scheduled between flights at an airport and our inbound flight is late and we can't do the one-on-one and we have to run to the... And so you're just like, you text and you say, I'm sorry, I just landed, I'm late. We're not going to be able to do our one-on-ones. Look at my calendar, pick another time and we'll do it then. And directs say they have no problem when a manager has to move a one-on-one, just like other meetings, as long as the manager treats them like other meetings and reschedules, as opposed to just, oh, we're going to cancel, I'm too busy.
Mm-hmm. And folks, when we tested this flexibility, the data supported the directs' comments. We compared several hundred managers who'd had their one-on-ones at their scheduled time, roughly 90% of the time, with managers who had their one-on-ones at the scheduled time around 50% of the time, and some even less than that, frankly.
Some even way less than that.
Yeah, exactly. And there was no difference in trust building, communication, or the results in retention between those two groups.
Yeah. Basically, even if you didn't know the opinion of the directs, the data say a high op tempo moved around a lot one-on-one generates the same results from retention improvement as a one-on-one that occurs at exactly the time it's scheduled.
Exactly. Now, what I will say, Mark, is you alluded moments ago about our travel schedules, et cetera. I actually have got maybe like a helpful little anecdote, little actionable note for the listeners out there.
Okay.
A strategy, because my calendar, like I'm sure many of yours, is completely unpredictable. I am somewhere different every single week. I'm on a different airplane. I'm going to a different location. I'm somewhere different. So I don't have the predictability of schedule. So I can say, oh, every Tuesday at 2 p.m., we'll be fine. Let's do a one-on-one. What I do is I schedule a recurring meeting at Tuesday at 2, let's say.
Right.
And in my direct one-on-one the week prior, at my portion of the one-on-one, the first thing I cover is, let's look at our calendars and make sure next week's time still works.
Yeah.
So like 5 business days, 7 days in advance, and that's when we make the adjustment. Now, is it foolproof? Does it mean my flights are never late and things still don't get pushed around? No, it does not. But getting out ahead of a need to reschedule 5 business days in advance decreases wildly the number of last minute scheduling changes right. I have to do, while also being enough days in advance that it's almost like that was our originally scheduled time. I mean,
yeah.
Because we rescheduled it so far in advance, it's almost like we don't even remember it was supposed to happen at Tuesday at 2.
Right. You knew going into the week.
Yeah, exactly.
You knew going into the week that it was Thursday at 8 a.m.
Exactly. So that's just the first thing on my list. Let's look at our calendar and we adjust. Pardon the interruption, but we constantly get asked if we bring on-site training to our listeners. And the answer is yes. You can have manager tools get to your organization. We go around the globe and we will get to you. Our organizational on-site training is session-based, not per head priced. We work with up to 30 people for $20,000 for any day of North America-based training. There's a little bit of an upcharge if we go overseas. This cost includes all of our expenses, and with the effective manager training, there's a Manager Tools corporate license afforded to all attendees. That's a $7,200 value. This allows you to incur no travel costs, nor time away from actual work to travel. If you have a group of up to 18, this is the most effective way to get your workforce trained. To learn more, contact Maggie by emailing her at customerservice@manager-tools.com. Now, back to the show.
All right. Because we've been talking so much about schedule, and obviously scheduling is the most important component, it's the title of this podcast, I decided to add in, at a high level, scheduling basics that we could go over. Somebody might be listening for the first time, they're like, well, okay, tell me how to schedule my one-on-ones. I will start by saying this. When we first started teaching scheduling, we just told people to schedule and we didn't know what would work and what didn't work. And over the course of several years, we got enough data back where we were able to glean some general guidance. But again, basically, the decision boiled down to one of two things. Either the manager scheduled the times in a way that was convenient for her, or the manager said, pick a time that's convenient for you. Okay. Neither one of those worked. They didn't. And we ended up with sort of an aggregation of both in a way, which we'll walk you through here in a second. We do have a podcast about how to schedule one-on-ones. I think if you're a licensee, it's linked to in this guidance. It's called One-on-One Scheduling Guidance. But we're just going to go over it at a high level. Step one, you scan your schedule. Now, folks, remember, I'm not telling you, you're going to choose the times for all your directs, nor are we going to tell you that their directs get to pick their time, but just walk through the logic here with us. You're going to look at your calendar about 4 weeks, 5 weeks in the future. That gets rid of all of the meetings that are current and urgent right now in the next week or two. 4 to 5 weeks from now, you're looking at your stable, standard, weekly, recurring meetings, quarterly meetings, monthly meetings, and so on. And we want you to pick out a certain number of times that will work for the number of directs you have. And the primary thing we want you to look for is times that work for you. Don't worry about your directs yet. So some examples, don't pick the time. Obviously, don't schedule it during your boss's staff meeting, or right before, right after your boss's staff meeting, or right before, or after your boss's, or during your boss's one-on-one with you, if he or she does one-on-ones with you. You know, if Tuesday afternoon, you go home at 4:30 because that's your day to pick up the kids from daycare, don't schedule a one-on-one from 4 to 4:30, okay, on Tuesday afternoon. You don't have to do that, okay? If on Thursday you do a special workout, you're in a running group, and you come in a half hour later, don't schedule your first one-on-one when you've just walked into the office after coming in from running group. Or you're going to be late a couple of times because of traffic or whatever. So be sensitive to that. And you've got to pick times for all of your directs based on what works for you.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Why don't we switch off? I'll do one. So you take step two.
So then step two is offer 1.5 times the number of directs you've got. So again, we're sitting down, we're looking at our calendar 5 weeks out, and let's assume in this case, you've got 6 directs. You're going to identify 9 30-minute time slots in your calendar, which you can offer up to the group.
Yeah.
So look for 9 times for 6 directs, 1.5 times.
Now you're thinking, wait, I don't have time for 6. How can I possibly make time for 9? Folks, the next step is we're going to allow your directs to choose. And if you give 6 directs, 6 slots, the last 2 people have very little choice, mm-hmm. and the last one has no choice.
Right?
So we want those extra times. 6 times 1.5 is 9. We give 6 directs, 9 slots. The last person still has 4 slots to pick from. Okay. Now I'll also give you a little advanced training. I mentioned this when we have time in an EMC as well. If your worst performer who responded late to the email, we recommend you do this by email. In some cases, you can do a poster on the wall in your office and have in the hallway and have people sign up manually. But email is a great way to do it. And you send out the email and you say, please reply to all and pick the time mm-hmm. that you want. And the beauty of it is when Joe responds, I want the Tuesday at 2:00, everybody else knows with the reply to all that Tuesday at 2:00 is gone. However, if Robert is your weakest performer, didn't respond for like 2 days, finally responded and said, I don't like any of the times, probably what you'll say is, pick one and we'll work it out from there in our first meeting. Because I can guarantee you, if you have room for this on your calendar 5 weeks from now, your direct's calendars are less busy than you.
Yeah.
And they have time as well. But again, remember, we're doing this 4 to 5 weeks in the future because don't try to do this next week because everybody's calendar will be too busy. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not busy. They're just urgent and overscheduled right now. But again, 5 weeks in the future, nothing. On the other hand, if Helen is your top performer and she was on a special meeting all day with your boss and she didn't get to the one-on-one scheduling email until the end of the day when all the times were picked and she says, hey, boss, I'm sorry, I'm just getting to this. I looked at the times that are left and none of them work for me. What you can tell Helen is, Helen, you're my number 2. You're my best performer. Pick a time that works for you. And I'll figure out how to make that work. Obviously, there are some limitations. Tell her to look at your calendar so she knows what's going on in 5 weeks, what your standing meetings are, and your leaving early days and coming in late days and so on. And you should have no problem at all. You know, taking care of Helen as opposed to Robert is part of the reason why we don't say management is fair. It's effective, but life is not fair. So everything doesn't have to be fair in that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, going back to a very small comment you made earlier, Mark, about when each individual replies to you to the series of available times and replies all, thus having all of their colleagues who also have to choose a time, CC'd, it does inherently increase urgency because people are like, oh, dang, right? If you sit down and like 3 of the times are already gone, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to leave this a couple of hours. I want to get in there because I want a good time before they're scooped.
By the way, if Robert, your poor performer, doesn't reply after 2 days, there's an email rule that applies to this. Most people don't know that. You would find it if you listen to our email cast. We have, I think, probably the best cast. It's a long one. It's called the Email Compendium Cast, where we put together, I think, 4 or 5 of our podcasts with all the high-level guidance on email and how to process email and so on. In fact, I have an executive I'm coaching right now who he was doing email while I was on the Zoom call with him. And I said, your boss is paying me handsomely to coach you every week. Don't ever do that again. And he said, I'm sorry, you're right. I'm addicted to it. I get so much mail. I said, dude, have you not listened to our email guidance? He says, no, what's that? And I told him about 3 times a day and how to do that. So just if, in fact, Robert breaks the rule, the first rule of email is you're required to know everything that's in your emails that come to you within 24 hours. You have to read them within 24 hours. Okay. The second rule is if the person who sent you the mail has the ability to task you, so in other words, your boss would certainly qualify as that, you're obligated to respond either with activity or acceptance if it takes more than 2 days to do something within 48 hours. So you only have to wait 48 hours for all your directs to respond. If Robert doesn't respond after 48 hours, don't let Robert, no offense to all your Roberts out there, hold your scheduling of one-on-ones hostage. And he's probably thinking to himself, he can't finish this until I respond. So I'll just not respond. He'll have to come find me and so on. No, what you do is after 48 hours, a reasonable period of time for them to have read their mail and taken the 30 seconds to look at their calendar and pick a time, you would send out an email at the end of those 48 hours and you say, hey folks, almost everyone has responded. Here's the schedule.
Yeah.
Don't go try to find Robert. Don't do that. Robert's being rude, and you should not coddle someone who's being rude and essentially ineffective and inefficient. Rude, ineffective, and inefficient. I'm not sure there's a better reason ever, 3 reasons in a row to fire somebody. I'm not suggesting you fire Robert over this, but you say almost everybody has responded. Here's the schedule, and you slot Robert into one of the free times. And when Robert, by the way, when he gets the second email saying he's been scheduled, after not responding to the first one for a couple of days, he'll respond to that one in like 5 nanoseconds. And he'll say, well, I didn't pick that time. And if it were me, now I'm known to have at times very low empathy, but I would respond with, I know, and I gave you enough time. I'll see you then. And we'll talk about scheduling in our first one-on-one.
Yeah.
Don't allow this to be held hostage by one person. It's just not right.
Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, folks, the last step here then is it's all right to ask for 1 or 2 changes. I mean, you're setting up the original schedule. That doesn't mean you're not going to realize that, oh, shoot, I forgot that I committed to like this thing every Thursday afternoon. And the same is true for them. Like, they might not realize, oh, dang, I apologize. I didn't realize that my spouse signed me up for this thing. And now I can't do that time anymore. But the flexibility to moving your scheduled time around on both ends will be helpful to everybody involved.
Yeah.
Don't be overly rigid.
Yeah. Now, we have a few more specific guidance based on a lot of data we've gained from our community after you go through that process in terms of how to make times available, those original times you send out in the email. First point. Please avoid Monday mornings and Friday afternoons for scheduling your one-on-ones. There are some exceptions, like if you've got a field force that is in the office on Monday morning and Friday afternoon, and then they go out in the field and so on. It's better to have in-person one-on-ones, so we would probably do in-person Monday morning or Friday afternoon. But Monday mornings, we want to not have meetings. We want to let people come to work and get their own work done. Meetings slow things down. There's an entire body of knowledge about this. I won't go into it right now, but Monday mornings, we want to try to leave people alone with meetings. If you're having your staff meeting on Monday morning to get everybody off on the right foot, stop it. Put it Monday afternoon. Let them get their work done on Monday morning. And the other one is Friday afternoon is not a good time because if you have a problem with the schedule, if your meeting gets stepped on, you don't have anywhere to move it to. You're just backed up again in the corner there. So the vast majority of our community schedules their one-on-ones between Mondays and Thursday noon. They use Thursday noon to Friday noon as sort of a place to catch up. There are exceptions depending upon your operational tempo and what days are important meetings and so on. But generally, avoid Monday mornings and Friday afternoons.
Mm-hmm. And to your point, Mark, also, folks, earlier in the week tends to be better. Like if you front load the week, I think about it, right? Between Monday noon, Thursday noon, it's generally a little bit better because then if, and probably, you're going to have reschedules that are required. You can reschedule till Thursday afternoon or Friday morning. You're still avoiding Friday afternoon because you front loaded your week. So try and make it so that you're trying it through most of the beginning of the week and there's room for rescheduling. Yeah.
The next one is timing is generally better on the hour and the half hour. This is even more true in the time of Zoom calls, which always seem to start at the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour. Although we know that our friends at Apple, all their meetings start at 5 minutes after, or is it 10 minutes after the
hour? If it's an hour, it's 10.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 10. Yeah. So generally do them at the top of the hour or the bottom of the hour.
Mm-hmm. And a question I get actually asked quite often is, no, that mornings or afternoons don't seem to make a difference. In a generic, holistic way, I can't say mornings are better because people are fresher. Is it true that some people are fresher in the morning? Sure. But is it a large enough sample size that we can make sweeping decisions? No, it's not. So whatever works for you, if you are better in the morning and you'd rather do them in the morning, do them in the morning. But afternoon is just as good.
Also, there's no clear benefit. Both work about the same. If you choose to schedule all your one-on-ones on a single day, or you spread them out in the course of the week. Some people like them all on the same day. That works fine. There's no difference in results from retention from somebody who says, you know, I spread them out. Now, if you've got 10 directs, you probably can't do them all on the same day. But I know people with 6 or 7 or 8 directs who they do them all, and that's their one-on-one day. And they essentially don't have much else going on other than the one-on-ones. But you could do it either way. It's fine.
Yeah. And then finally, some managers prefer back-to-back one-on-ones with no time in between, and others like breaks in between. Now, I mean, think about yourself. Think about the meetings you usually run. Don't schedule a bunch of one-on-ones back-to-back and then make it like the domino effect that happens in the doctor's office, right? The first one goes 3 minutes long. And then the next one starts 3 minutes late, so that it goes 6 minutes long, and then it's a cascading effect. So the last person is like, seriously, when is this one-on-one going to start? So don't do that. If you can keep to 30 minutes, that's ideal. If you're going to leave breaks, you might want to think about, and I know nobody likes this because calendaring software doesn't love it, you might want to be mindful about break length and essentially schedule your meetings so that while they're 30-minute meetings, they allow for breaks of no more than 10 minutes in between, generally. So like I'm thinking like 30-minute one-on-one, 10-minute break. 30-minute one-on-one, 10-minute break. 30-minute one-on-one. And I say that, folks, because if you leave 30-minute breaks between 30-minute meetings, you will feel like you'll be exhausted and drained at the end of the day, but all you will feel like you've gotten done or accomplished is a bunch of one-on-ones and poking around your email.
All the in-between time.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I know no one likes scheduling a meeting from 3:10 to 3:40. I know you hate it. Calendars don't play well with weird timings that don't start at the top or half of the hour, but you will like the experience better. And I mean, if it's me, I mean, we don't say Zoom drain anymore. That was like a big thing at the beginning of the pandemic.
Right.
But if you book them back to back, you're going to feel a little Zoom drain.
Yeah. Although we do recommend face to face. And I'll go back to something earlier. If you're doing hybrid right now, and believe me, in a couple of years, you won't be. You'll be in the office 5 days a week. But if you're doing hybrid now, do your one-on-ones when your people are in the office.
Oh, yeah.
Do not let them schedule on the day when they're scheduled to be out of the office. Don't do that. Face-to-face works better. It's notably better than phone calls, and it's also better, but not as much notably better as video calls. Video calls still work, and phone calls still work, but they're only 90% as effective video and only 80% effective on the phone.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, that's that, folks. So as Mark mentioned earlier, we have a whole podcast on one-on-one scheduling guidance if you're interested in more information on the topic. But know, scheduling your one-on-ones in advance matters, not just because the data supports it significantly, but also because directs believe it makes a significant statement about their importance to you. And directs also understand that scheduling is fluid in a modern organization. And moving them and adjusting them and having flexibility with them is fine. But scheduling them in advance is more than fine. It's necessary.
Good.
Alrighty. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
That's all for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Join us again next week as we cover a brand new topic.
Thanks, folks. See you then.